Great. Hello. Thanks for having me. We're excited to be here. I'm Megan Stanton. I'm a doctoral student at the University of Pennsylvania, and my colleague Lynn Walker and I are going to present on housing as a structural intervention for transgender people living with HIV. I have nothing to disclose. So there are a few main goals of this presentation. First, I'm going to review a little bit about HIV risk and prevalence for gender nonconforming and transgender individuals. Then I'm going to turn it over to Lynn Walker, who's the Managing Program Director of Housing at HousingWorks, to talk a little bit about the program that is the topic of the study, the Transgender Transitional Housing Program. And then I'm going to present and discuss a collaborative qualitative research project between HousingWorks and UPenn, looking at housing as a structural intervention for transgender and gender nonconforming individuals. So what do we know about HIV prevalence for transgender people? Systematic review found prevalence estimates at about 30%, and this is for transgender women. It's worth noting that this is just male to female transgender women. There's very little research on transgender men, and what research exists shows fairly low prevalence. There's higher rates for African-American transgender women and high rates of self-reported engagement in sexual risk behaviors at about 30 to 50%. So what contributes to HIV risk for transgender people? Well, one helpful way to think about it is syndemic theory, which comes from the epidemiological literature. And basically, it refers to multiple mutually reinforcing epidemics in a single population. And this has been used to articulate the complex and interrelated environmental and social risk factors that cumulatively determine HIV risk for transgender people. So how does this work? So basically, you know, binary gender is a powerful social organizing force, and transgender individuals face stigma and discrimination. And research has shown that this stigma and discrimination impacts access to education, employment, healthcare, housing, and social services. And there are material consequences to this kind of marginalization, as seen in high risk of unemployment, incarceration, and homelessness. And this results in exposure to risk environment, which might then further marginalization. So how does this relate to HIV? Research has shown that social and structural elements of this marginalization risk environment feedback loop has been associated with sexual risk behavior for transgender women, which is the most commonly self-reported route of HIV transmission for transgender women. So, clearly, HIV risk for transgender individuals has interrelated structural, social, and individual dimensions. And accordingly, research has called for the development of services that are responsive to the unique experiences of transgender individuals, multi-component interventions to address the full constellation of service needs for transgender people, and interventions to specifically address structural barriers transgender individuals face, such as housing. And even though there's some emerging research that shows some promising pilot work for interventions, HIV interventions specifically created for transgender folks, there's very little research specifically looking at structural interventions such as housing and their impact on positive health behaviors for trans women living with HIV. And so that leads us to our current research on the Transgender Transitional Housing Program, at HousingWorks, which I'm going to turn over to Lynn to describe.
Thanks, Megan.
So we started, let me start first by saying I noticed a small handful of programs during the course of at least today talking about partnership between academia and community-based organizations. And this is what we do. And so on behalf of HousingWorks, I can say that we're really glad to be working with UPenn and the staff there to do this great work. We're discovering that we can prove what we already know, but we're discovering other cool stuff along the way. HousingWorks exists to end the dual crises of HIV, AIDS, and homelessness. One of the things that we learned early on was that one of the populations most severely impacted by those two crises is people of transgender experience. More specifically, people of transgender experience who are moving from M to F, right? So around 10 or 11 years, 13 years ago, there was an RFP, and it started. Ordinarily, we serve around 30 people during the course of an eight given quarter. They stay with us between 6 months and 2 years. Housing Works was an outgrowth, actually. We were originally the housing subcommittee of ACT UP. So we've got that kind of sense about us, you know, that we're not just here to do social services. We're here to change the world and make trouble. Mm-hmm. So we've got this contract, 30 apartments in central Brooklyn. We get them there because they are cheap there. Our residents, once we bring them in, Housing Works is big. We can give them pretty much whatever they need, medical care, dental care, legal care. That's an important one. Mental health, substance use, pretty much whatever they need, we've got. We just expanded our legal department for that very reason, for that among many other reasons. When we started, I think we were unique, meaning that we were the only one. Since then, they've started one in Chicago. There's one starting, I think, in Baltimore. There's one on the West Coast. But as far as I can tell, I think we were the first to have this model of decentralized, scattered site housing for people of transgender experience living with HIV/AIDS. Initially, we started calling it transgender. Over the last maybe 5 years, we're moving more toward a definition that includes gender nonconforming. That's what's happening. That's what the teenagers are telling us. Almost all of our clients, and by that I mean like 95%, have been M to F folks, transgender women. Almost all of them have been African American and Latina. Probably 15% are not. Two or three Asians in the 7 years that I've been there, a couple of people of European descent. I can tell you that most of them use some sort of substance, most often weed, often crack. They have mental illness. They engage in sex work because it's survival sex. The average length of stay is 15 months. That actually changed. We're down to about 13 months as of last month. Once we get them housed, though, we keep them for 6 months to 2 years in transitional housing. Once we get them housed and permanent, they'll stay there a long time unless they get arrested. They get arrested, but not as much as they used to, because they pick up some life skills along the way. We've had clients come to us right after high school, and they don't know, think of high school students. They don't know about hangers and closets or clean bathrooms. By the time we finish with them, they know about hangers and closets and clean bathrooms, and they've got some other kinds of survival skills to avoid unfortunate encounters with people in blue uniforms with guns. It's a low-threshold program. We employ the principles of harm reduction. We expect that they're going to use drugs. We try to get them to manage whatever substances they're using. My staff is around 24/7. We provide them with the case management at least once a week, usually a couple of times a week. Life skills training. We also have a job training program in the agency so that once they start with us, if they stick with it, we guarantee them a job at the end of that time frame. That's another really cool thing that we're really proud of. And I talked about the other referrals. Pretty much anything that they need, we can get for them. When there are difficulties with them, as there will be, because this is how humans are, we'll start with a contract. You do this, we do that. Regular contract, right? And if that doesn't work, then we may have to occasionally do case conferences with the workers that they have at the New York City HIV/AIDS Services Administration, and we might have to evict them. But it's a good program. And I will turn this back over to Megan so that she can talk about the research we're doing. Thank you.
Thanks, Lynn. So in partnership with Housing Works, we did a qualitative study, and we did 30 in-depth semi-structured interviews, and these were all with current or past recipients of TTHP services. In the qualitative interviews, the clients were asked about their past and present HIV health experiences and housing experiences. Data were analyzed according to inductive themes, and then it became clear that the theory of planned behavior could be a useful analytic framework, and we did an analytic analysis using those constructs. We found two main themes. One was sort of a really overarching theme, and that was the interconnectedness of gender identity and holistic health, which included HIV health. And as you'll see in the other results, that those two things were really inextricably linked, and so you can't sort of compartmentalize gender identity and HIV health. And then the second was we found that there were two main pathways through which stable housing in the context of TTHP influenced health behavior, and that was a materiality pathway and a subjectivity pathway, and I'll talk about them separately. So first, the materiality process. So that's quite literally the aspects of the physical environment, stability of housing, and structure of programs that affect health behavior. And so the first was that safe, stable, and independent housing provides a reduction in exposure to risk environment and a respite from previously chaotic living situations. So this participant talks about how access to transitional housing helped her remove herself from the risk environment, and specifically in this case, she no longer was exchanging sex for housing. But in an interesting intersection of gender identity, risk behavior, and housing, she also talks about how it was a place for her to focus on her transition, to develop as a woman, and to develop into the kind of woman she wanted to be. So with the support of the TTHP community, she could develop as a woman in a way that avoided ceding to negative expectations that she perceived to be attributed to being a transgender woman. For most participants, access to safe and stable housing through the transitional program was a buffer from risks associated with unstable housing. Another participant talks about having her own apartment and how that relates to HIV health. So the theme of being able to close your door and control your own environment was really pervasive throughout all the interviews. And it had effects on medication adherence. You know, nobody was coming in and stealing your meds to sell. You had a place that you could predictably have your medications and take them at a regular interval. It also had effects on other aspects of holistic health, like being able to cook your own food, being able to manage your appointments, have a calm place to live. And safe, stable housing also played a role for many participants' transition, so having a private place to explore your gender identity, which had a strong impact on general health. The second dimension of the materiality pathway was related to access to services that are aware of and responsive to the unique experiences of transgender individuals. So the term trans-friendly really came from participants, and it referred to services that respected self-identified gender identity and had policies in place to accommodate gender non-conforming individuals. So for this participant, it was important for her to feel safe and accepted as a woman first, and then the program could address whatever the program is supposed to address. But if gender identity is not respected and supported, the client doesn't even have a chance to get started, and that was really a non-starter. And TTHP provides services that are trans-competent and refers to such services and provides support if clients are interacting with a service that is not being respectful of their gender. So the second main pathway was the subjectivity process. And this is really based around the development of a supportive and informed community of transgender people living with HIV who've experienced homelessness. And this is where it's helpful to use the theory of planned behavior that says intentions are predictors of behavior and that self-efficacy, attitudes, and subjective norms shape intentions. So starting with self-efficacy, this person talks about how engaging with the community at TTHP really helped her change her perspective from HIV as a death sentence to HIV that is something that the participant has control over. And this is important to remember the context of the program. It's in HousingWorks, whose central mission is to disseminate accurate information about HIV. So that means the trans community at TTHP has an overall increased knowledge pool about HIV and has lots of access to information to develop healthy HIV management skills. But self-efficacy means more than just learning skills. And so the community at TTHP helped this participant move through the emotional work of understanding her diagnosis, feeling able and competent to exercise control over her own health. Moving to attitudes, we broke attitudes into two separate themes. So first, the effect of the community on attitudes about gender identity and how that relates to HIV health. And I am going to read quickly. She says, "I think subconsciously on some level I was trying not to be here because I'd stopped taking my meds and stuff for about a year. So really the point where I transitioned was the point where I picked up my life again and started to really watch over my health. Now things are back in track, you know, being undetectable. She started to care about her HIV health once she felt comfortable in her transition. You know, and at the risk of being incredibly simplified, wanting to live has an important effect on wanting to take care of your own health. And so again, you can't extract the development and acceptance of gender identity from HIV health. And so finally, we'll come to the subjective norms. Attitudes about HIV health. Participants also are in a community that is open about discussing HIV, and so that was an important contributor to fighting stigma and feeling comfortable talking about HIV and HIV health. And so changing attitudes about HIV health in the context of the community was important. And then finally, subjective norms. So in the community, norms of health were encouraged by healthy role models. So this person talks about finding inspiration in other residents, connecting with other women, and this is both other clients and staff, because many of the staff also identify as a transgender experience. And then secondly, norms of mutual support, encouragement, and hopefulness to maintain health through difficult times. So in conclusion, safe and stable housing allows transgender and gender nonconforming people living with HIV/AIDS to control the extent to which they're exposed to the risk environment and provides a safe space to practice positive health behaviors. It provides access to services that are appropriate for and welcoming to transgender individuals, and that has a profound impact on success of treatment outcomes. And the development of a supportive and knowledgeable community creates a safe social and psychological space that fosters positive health behaviors, and that this community is specifically in touch with the unique interplay of gender identity and holistic health. And I know that was a lot of information very quickly, so I do have handouts that have the quotes that you can read at your leisure and mill over, but I would like to thank you very much.
Great. Thanks, Megan. Next, we have Michael Koth.